the Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, O Lord.
When Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of King Herod, behold, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw a star at its rising and have come to do him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was greatly troubled, and all of Jerusalem with him. Assembling all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it has been written through the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, since from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod called the Magi secretly and ascertained from them the time of the star's appearance. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go and search diligently for the child. When you have found him, bring me word that I too may go and do him homage.' After their audience with the king, they set out. And behold, a star that they had seen at its rising preceded them until it came and stopped over the place where the child was. They were overjoyed at seeing the star, and on entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother. They prostrated themselves and did him homage. Then they opened their treasures and offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed for their country by another way." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
When my mom was pregnant with me, and I was the oldest child to be born, she and my dad quickly realized that they needed to start searching for a new house in which to raise their growing family. Up until then, they had been living on my grandpa's property. They had this little quaint country cottage that was actually perfect for a newly married couple to get their start, but with kids on the way, they realized they needed to expand. And so after searching from property to property and weighing the pros and cons of each, they settled on the house that I ended up growing up in. And I don't think they could have made a better pick. It was a perfect place for a country boy to be born and raised. It's this two-story country house, probably over 100 years old, very old house, a lot of character to it. And it was set on this 8-acre property. And it was great to grow up on because we had these woods that surrounded the whole place. You kind of felt like the rest of the world disappeared or didn't exist when you were on that property. You had this wall of trees that surrounded you, and you could go out and play in those woods and enjoy it. In fact, the only break in the tree line was if you were to go down to the end of the lane and you looked north down the road, and you could see about a half a mile down the way, past the fields and the pastures, the church of Old St. John's. And you could see it kind of, the spire of it would glisten in the sunlight. You know, it was like a spike of pearl set in the sky. And then its crickstone walls were like silver in the morning light. Beautiful scene. Beautiful scene to see that. Now, the house itself, strong foundation that it was built on. You know, like I said, it was a very old house. We never had any problems with its foundation. We had the basement down below that Dad would try to make his homemade wines there. I do mean he tried, because sometimes it worked out, sometimes not so much, and it ended up like vinegar. But every once in a while he would succeed, and we had this wonderful peach or strawberry wine. And then Mom, she would have her preserves down there. She had all these jams that she did, all these strawberry, blackberry, raspberry jams. And she'd also have all of these things that she would keep in the jars, those ball jars that she would use. And she had the green beans and the tomatoes and a whole bunch of other stuff that we would can from the garden, and then we'd have it for the winter time and into the next year. Now, being an older house, Dad had to do a little bit of a remodeling to the place, renovations throughout the years. And we quickly realized, you know, how old the house was. Nothing was quite square. You know, everything was just a little off than you would expect. And so he put shiplat in the boards in the dining room. And when he had done that, you could see a noticeable curve in the wall. There was kind of this bowing effect in the wall itself. And then in the kitchen, he tried to put new countertops in there. And he was outside, you know, and he was measuring how to cut it, you know, and cutting everything perfectly square and 90-degree angles. And he took it into the kitchen and tried to install it and realized, like, nothing lined up. You know, the walls were all cattywampus, you know, and he had to go back outside and recut everything. And even to this day, there's a section of the countertops that we know you can't put anything heavy on, you can't sit on it, because it's really not supported by anything, and you could fall right through. So even to this day, we have to be careful with that. When they moved into the place, the floors were covered with shag carpet from back in the day, these hideous, ugly shag carpet. And I remember being a young boy and Dad ripping the carpet up and finding this beautiful hardwood floor underneath. And I didn't really care about the hardwood floors. I was just excited because I wore cowboy boots all the time. And I could finally hear my cowboy boots go clickety-clack on the hardwood floors as opposed to the shag carpet that would dull the sound. And once he had that all ripped up and we had the hardwood floors exposed, me and my siblings, every year for Christmas, Grandma Badel would make us these yarn slippers. She would crochet them for us. And so kids with yarn slippers on hardwood floors, it was great. You get a good running start, and you could slide for about 10 feet. You know, it was great. And so we would get our slippers, and then we would take a peanut butter jar and take the lid off of it and use that as a hockey puck. And then we put the furniture to the side, and with our slippers and the puck, we play floor hockey on the inside of the house. I don't think Mom was very pleased about it, but we had a great time doing that. And then the upstairs of the house, that's where all the bedrooms were. We had three bedrooms up there, seven people living in that house. So you can do the math, it was pretty crowded up there. And being an older house, the insulation was terrible. It did a terrible job of keeping the cold out in the wintertime and a terrible job keeping the heat out. It was Indiana summers. And so at night, rather than turning the air conditioning on and wasting the money for that, we would just open the windows upstairs and put the fans in to let the cool night air be blown in. And so I have many happy memories of going to bed at night, being serenaded to sleep by the sound of the crickets and the bullfrogs out in the distance, singing their lullaby with the chirping and the croaking of their sounds. And every once in a while, you'd catch a whiff of the honeysuckle that grew outside, and it would come in through the window, and that's how we went to bed at night in the summertime. And then in the front yard, between the house and the road, there was this valley that existed, this downward slope, and it was the perfect place to go sledding as a kid in the wintertime when the snow fell. And down at the bottom of the hill was one of the wells that existed on the property. And so for the kids, it was always a big challenge to be the first one to get to the well. And you had to pack the snow down and prepare the path for the sleigh, you know, so that you could race down there and get to the well before anybody else. And then on the opposite side of the lane, there was this huge open yard that took forever to mow, even with a riding lawnmower. But in the summertime, it was great because that's where we would play our football games, our baseball games, badminton, any of our athletic events would take place out there, and it was just a great place to run around and just enjoy the outdoors and catch some sunlight. Back behind the garage, behind the house, that's where Dad had his garden. He had row upon row of sweet corn and green beans and potatoes and tomatoes and pumpkins and watermelon. But he always reserved the first few rows of that garden to plant flowers for Mom, knowing that she loved those things, and she'd she'd pick them, and then she'd put them in a vase to put on the kitchen table to decorate the house. Next to the garage on the other side was where our orchard was. We had our apple trees and peach trees and pear trees. That's where we had our famous apple wars that I talked about in another homily. We had our strawberry patch back there, raspberries. I remember spending hours picking those strawberries, and you had to be very diligent because you knew that the reddest, biggest, juiciest strawberries were at the very bottom under the thick leaves right next to the dirt, and you had to really search for them. You didn't want to miss those big, juicy berries. And of course, Mom would use those for her jams that we'd enjoy throughout the year. And it was a great place to grow up. A lot of memories in that place. And one of those memories was an evening when I was a kid that we invited the priest, Father Bramlage, to come to the house for dinner and to bless the house. And I remember he came and we all sat around the dinner table, you know, and we're laughing, having a great time, telling stories. And then we got finished with dinner and we put the dishes in the sink, and Father Bramlage had brought his book of blessings. And he opened it up, and there at the dinner table in the dining room, he said these prayers that almost made it feel like our house had become a church. There was this sense that we were truly inviting Christ to live with us, to take up a dwelling in that house on our day-to-day basis. And after he got done with those prayers, you know, he pulled out the bucket of holy water, and Dad took him on a tour of the whole property, and he was splashing everything with that holy water. And so he ended up blessing the basement where we had the wine and the preserves and the jams. He blessed the uneven walls and corners of the house and those hardwood floors that we enjoyed. He went upstairs and he blessed our bedrooms and the beds that we slept in and the windows that we'd open in the summer. He blessed the hill that ran down that we went sledding in and the field that we played football and soccer in. He blessed the garden that Dad grew his produce in, and he blessed the orchard that we got all of our fruit from. He blessed the garage and the shed. He blessed it all. And in that, it was consecrated. It was made holy. And then we went back into the house, and he gave us this portrait of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And he instructed us to hang that on our living room wall, and every night, before we ate supper together, we were to pray a prayer to the Sacred Heart, reminding us that he was with us, reminding us that it was because of him that we were united as a family. And so we did. Every night we prayed that prayer. And even to this day, we've all grown up. We've left the house. We've started our own families, gotten our own jobs. But when we get together for Christmas or New Year's or birthdays or whatever, before we begin eating supper, we all say that prayer, knowing it by heart. And so I had to ask myself after that day, does blessing a physical house make it a better home? Well, let's look at another example. Centuries ago, there was a man who owned a building. Well, it was more of a cave, really. And history has forgotten the name of this man. We have no idea who he was. All we know about him was that he owned this cave and that he stored his things there, most prominently his animals, his oxen and his donkeys. And that there was a night where a pregnant woman and her husband showed up this man's door, and they asked for a place to stay. And so he took them to his stable, his cave, and he let them stay there. And because of that, even if he didn't realize it, he had invited God into that space. And God made his dwelling there. And that space was never the same again. People came there to experience something divine, something beyond this world. Shepherds came in from the fields, these poor, seeking some sense of hope. And then there were kings from distant lands who followed a star, these men of wealth and power and wisdom and knowledge. And they didn't come to a palace or some luxurious place, but a nasty, smelly old cave. Because something existed there that didn't exist anywhere else in the world. Does blessing a house make it a better home? Well, now, if you were to go there to see that cave, it doesn't look like a cave at all. In fact, it's this magnificent basilica that exists there in Bethlehem. And you have to go behind the high altar, and there's this stairwell that leads down below into the cave itself. And you go down there, and people throughout the centuries have flocked there from around the world, not necessarily to see a star in the sky, but to see a star on the floor that marks the exact spots where God came into the world and made his dwelling among us. And you can place your hand on that star, that very spot, or you can run your hand along the manger that is cut into the very living rock of that cave, knowing that that was the place that the Christ child was laid. People go there not because the basilica is beautiful or it's wonderful to see or it's filled with these luxurious pieces of art. They go because God is there. And so we have this wonderful tradition on the Feast of the Epiphany to bless our own homes, to make them a dwelling place of God, to make them the domestic church. And so as we leave Mass today, we have this great prayer, this great kit that we are providing for you to go home and bless your homes. We have Epiphany House Blessing, and it instructs us on the prayers to say, how we can bless our own homes, because it's true, it's great to have a priest come and actually sprinkle it with holy water, but every family has the responsibility and the privilege of being able to bless their own house. And so with that prayer, we also give you a piece of chalk. And with the prayer, there's a part where we sign the lintel of the door with this chalk, with these symbols that remain there throughout the year, reminding us again and again as we walk in and out of that door from our daily routine that our home is a place where Christ dwells. Our home is a citadel of peace and goodwill, all the things that Christmas promise us. And we carry it with us throughout the year because it has been blessed. Because God dwells with us. Emmanuel, God with us. Does blessing a house make it a better home? Yes. Yes, it does.